What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, our guest is Sally Poulat, representing Leket Israel, the Israeli Food Bank, which received the 2024 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for service to Kolol Yisrael, the Jewish people. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. I just returned from my favorite rabbi's conference, the Onig Study Kala, which meets in Colorado every year. We study morning and evening, hold services, and talk about Judaism throughout the 4 days of the conference. Various rabbis teach at Onig. This year, I taught a session, as I've done from time to time. You get to choose your own topic and prepare your own materials. I taught a section that compared artificial intelligence interpretation of the Torah to traditional rabbinic commentary. Artificial intelligence is everywhere in the media now. People vigorously debate whether it's good or evil. There are profound concerns. AI will replace humans in various jobs, that a truly sentient computer or digital entity of some kind will take over the world, and so on. Rabbis like to joke that they're about to be replaced by AI programmable robots who can deliver better sermons, conduct better services, and perform weddings and funerals, all at a fraction of the cost of a real live human rabbi. But as I played around with two different AI engines, what emerged for me is that the whole debate about whether AI is good or bad is off target. Artificial intelligence platforms are a new kind of tool. Or rather, they present new kinds of toolboxes. AI can be a way to find out basic information, of course, or a sort of entertaining game of exploring information available in the vast storehouse of, I guess, everything available on the internet. AI can send you in the wrong direction, politely, by the way, or you may find yourself going down an informational rabbit hole, losing hours researching things you might or might not really be interested in. But it also provides some truly fascinating and illuminating perspectives on important questions. And questions, those are really the key to the whole enterprise, which is very Jewish, maybe too Jewish. The way it works is you start by asking your AI engine, ChatGPT's Open Artificial Intelligence, for example, or Claude AI, or another of a variety of competing platforms that are out there. You start by asking your AI engine a question. It responds quickly, writing a program to find out the information you've asked for. You then see whether it's gone in the direction you were interested in learning about, or if you need to reformulate the question or keep asking a line of questions that dig deeper into the issue. AI takes some training to get good at it, training of both the user and the artificial intelligence platform, in order to come up with valuable material. In the Torah commentary project I tried, it took a number of different attempts at an effective prompt before I finally hit, well, the mother lode. But boy, when I finally figured out the best prompt, that is, the best question to use, I received a fabulously designed set of thoughts and ideas that advanced my understanding of the topic I was playing around with, which brought me to understand that using artificial intelligence can and perhaps should be a profoundly Jewish experience, because the way that we Jews traditionally learn is always by learning to ask good questions, and eventually the right questions. This Q&A process is evident throughout the Torah, and in the books of the prophets, and throughout the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible. And what is the Talmud, the Mishnah, and the Gemara, but a series of questions and answers, always followed by more questions? And you know, ask a rabbi a question, and what do you get? A question. Figuring out the right prompt, That's always been the key to Jewish learning. Reminds me of a famous story. Isidore Rabi, winner of a Nobel Prize for Physics, was once asked why he became a scientist. He replied, "My mother made me a scientist without ever knowing it. Every other child would come back from school and be asked, 'What did you learn today?' But my mother used to say, 'Izzy, did you ask a good question today?'" In the case of my artificial intelligence exercise, I asked a couple of these AI engines to analyze the similarities and differences between the blessings Jacob gives his sons at the end of the book of Genesis and the blessings that Moses gives the Israelite tribes at the end of the book of Deuteronomy. Both of the AI bots I tried did a good job comparing and contrasting these two important messages in solid, if sometimes a little academic, language. One of the AI platforms could even create a visual graph showing the similarities and differences between Jacob's words and Moses's, using dynamic visual ways to dramatize the answers to my prompts. When I asked what other commentators throughout history said about these texts, I immediately received a flow of answers that were serviceable, sometimes fairly good, if unimaginative. But when I finally figured out what I needed to ask, well, the reply from the AI engine, in this case Claude, was nothing short of fabulous. The prompt that hit the rabbinic jackpot was, "What do the differences and similarities between these two blessings teach us about life?" The AI bot came up with 8 extraordinary ideas here, all of them worthy of creating a lesson or a sermon. Time can transform curses into blessings. There's a natural evolution in thought and responsibility and inspiration from the personal to the communal. In society, there must be a balance between justice and unity. There are uneven outcomes in life. They aren't always, or perhaps even often, fair. There is a great power in redemptive narratives, and so on. Frankly, those results were valuable to me as a rabbi and would be to anyone seeking personal or societal meaning from these classic Torah texts. In other words, artificial intelligence is an extraordinary tool, potentially extremely useful and valuable in a wide variety of applications. Like any tool, it can be used properly and practically, and it can also be misused. A hammer can build or harm. A laptop can create value, or it can be used to scam other people. Like any tool, you just have to kind of figure out how to use it. It's all, in AI's case, in the kinds of questions you ask. Just as so much of how we can improve our world comes down to the kinds of questions we ask and how we ask them. To play us in on Two Jewish this morning, here's 6:13's version of Tamid Ohev Oti. He, that is God, always loves me.
Hashem hu aba tov ve'hu tamid mitpa'er bi ro'e bi rak ta'nekudot ha'tovot ro'e sh'ani rotze li'ot tov rak lo yotze li v'chaserot li kula kama tfilot ve'Hashem hu gam ra'a et ha'ratzon she'haya bi k'sheniseiti lo amarti no'ash ro'e ba'bizayon sheli b'amar she'hirgashti eich hitchalti shuv kol yom echad חכות מלא אותי בזה שאתה תמיד אוהבתי תיתן לי כל יום מחדש מתנות ותניג אותי ברחמים כאלו כמו שבעולם הזה נקרא רחמים שירו כולם שכן על השומע תפילות ונחייך נהיה בריא ונשים והשם יתברך
Yeah.
was Tamid Ohev Oti, sung by the a cappella group 613. Our guest this morning is Sally Pulat, representing Leket Israel, the Israeli food bank, which received the 2024 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for its incredible service to Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people as a whole. Leket has grown from a single van collecting leftover hotel food to give to the hungry into a food bank in Israel that provides 415,000 meals daily to people throughout the country. Meet Sally and learn about Leket when she joins us in a moment as we return on Too Jewish. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N, award.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish this morning Sally Pulat, a representative of Leket Israel, which is an incredible organization, recipient of the 2024 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for service to Klal Yisrael, the whole peoplehood of Israel. Leket started in the back of a couple of cars, bringing extra food that banquets couldn't use, hotels, bringing it to people who were hungry in Israel. It is now really the Israeli food bank and has become extraordinarily important, particularly during this Gaza war, and was for the only time so far in the Kohan Memorial Foundation's pretty long history, it's the only organization to win that award twice. Welcome to Too Jewish, Sally. Welcome to the States, and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about Leket.
Yeah. So as you said, it started with a gentleman by the name of Joseph Gittler, who made Aliyah with his family in 2001. And in 2003, like all of us go to events, we wonder what happens to all that food behind the...
All the leftovers.
All the leftovers. And Joseph did something about it. He spoke to the caterer, and caterer basically said, well, I feed my staff with the leftovers and the rest of it we have to get rid of. Joseph then proceeded to meet with about 100 nonprofits over the course of 3 months after that.
Wow.
To find out what he can do with this leftover food. And by far, they told him, we spent so much time raising money for food for our network and our organization. And Joseph said, if I provide you with the food, you can then focus on your core competencies, right? They said, yes. 22 years later, Leket works with over 300 nonprofit NGOs all over Israel and about 800 farmers in two different areas of what we do.
I have cousins who live in Jerusalem. They're retired. Mm-hmm. They were taking a Leket bus down to help harvest food in the south of Israel where all the workers were gone after October 7th. Tell us about that program a little bit.
So, as you can imagine, our entire organization and what we do had to change after October 7th. The executive leadership at Leket got together that very same night of the attacks and decided and prioritized who we had to take care of. At that time, we were feeding about 330,000 Israelis a week. And it's two different areas of our organization. One is rescuing food and delivering prepared food to the NGOs that provide it to the people that need it. And the second is to collect Leket, right?
Yeah.
Gleaning of the fields.
Picking up that which nobody else can. They haven't been able to harvest, right?
And the farmers have been such incredible partners over these last 22 years, and they became a priority along with the evacuees. As you just said, the labor force after October 7th basically went away, the day laborers. So the tithes that came in, they were about 20,000 a day came in and agriculturally helped Israel, as well as about 25,000 day workers from Palestinians, the Gaza Strip. And that all stopped, thank God. So the immediate need, one of the immediate needs, was to help the farmers harvest what they could to sustain their livelihood, to sustain their business and their farms. So Leckett, as we just talked about, right, we set up about 50 buses a week from Yerushalayim, from Tel Aviv, from Netanya. And these buses had about 40 to 50 volunteers. Initially, they were all Israelis because people were leaving Israel, not coming to Israel, right?
Right.
So the Israeli population, about 70% of the Israeli population, actually volunteered within the 3 to 4 months after the war. We filled those buses, and we continue to do so, Rabbi, to help those farmers in the Gaza envelope, where 75% of Israelis' agriculture comes from.
It's extraordinary. We will talk much more with Sally Poulat from Leket Israel, the winner of the 2024 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for their work on behalf of Klal Yisrael, the people of Israel, when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established 6 years ago by congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the Catalina foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education in Academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests warmly in our sanctuary. Call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Religious school is available for school-age children and grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes, confirmation, teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. All of our services, classes, and events at Beit Simcha are open to everybody. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. Our very musical services are in person and by virtual experience. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those. Go to the website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, Torah Tikes program, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, all taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation and the most dynamic one in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio 18 at Gmail, or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments all help.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
We welcome Tom Price, our expert on the international Jewish scene. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, there's an old joke. There used to be a joke that said that, probably still around, that said that a man can be in the White House, in the Oval Office, President of the United States, wearing a yarmulke with tzitzis on as the president, provided that man is not Jewish. So I thought about that joke. When looking at Latin America right now, two of the major countries in Latin America, Mexico and Argentina. Mexico is led by Claudia Sheinbaum, who is Jewish, descended from partly from Sephardic Jews and partly from European Jews. And Milei, the head of Argentina, is converting to Judaism and is an absolute Judeophile. I don't know what else to call it. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, Milei is in the throes of a conversion course and is, according to one of my close friends in Mendoza, surprisingly popular. People were very skeptical of him at the beginning, but he has earned confidence and respect. Sheinbaum, to me, it's interesting the way you describe her. Her family is from Plovdiv, which in ancient times was Philippopolis. It was the city of Philip of Macedon. The Plovdiv Jews are descended from people who were expelled from Spain. But yeah, they are Sephardic, but I don't think they're non-European.
No, I guess she also has Ashkenazic descent too. I think it's a mix from what I've read.
Right. I mean, Sheinbaum's not
exactly a descended from Spain kind
right.
of name,
right?
Right. I shouldn't have said European. I should have said Ashkenaz, some right. kind of Ashkenazic background too. You know, Latin America, which was so heavily Catholic for so long, now is Catholic, as well as we see a lot of evangelical inroads all across the continent. Yes, there have been Jewish communities going back to earliest parts of the 16th century, maybe even the late 15th century, and there's been significant ones, but still, it was very hard to conceive. I think growing up, I could never imagine a Jewish head of state in Latin America. And now two of the really major countries are led
right.
by people who are either Jewish or becoming Jewish.
And also, Mexicans really like to think of themselves as a macho country and as a very masculine place, right?
For sure.
Bullfighters and all that stuff. But Mexicans elected a woman president before we did.
That's right.
I think that's Ashanda.
I think America's resistance to having a woman president is fascinating because that is not the case anywhere else in the world that you can think of more or less anymore. You've spent a lot of time in Argentina. Argentina is a complicated place in that there are immigrants from many different places, as well as natives who were there all along. And there was a significant population, of course, of Germans who came after World War II, ex-Nazis who settled there, most notably people like, Eichmann, you know,
right.
Yimach Shmo. And yet Jews have also lived there and been prominent there for a long time. I just think it's a fascinating balance.
Yeah, you're right that Argentina is a very complicated country, and it's a very regional country, and each region has like different traditions, a slightly different language, different customs, different foods. And I have to say that the only region I know remotely well is the city of Mendoza and the area that surrounds it, which is the heart of the Latin American wine industry, which is quite important in Argentina and Chile and to some extent even in Mexico.
I will add that my wife's father's family is from Argentina. They were Argentinian Israelis. They made Aliyah, and that's where he grew up, but they were born in Argentina. So I have a little bit of knowledge of it, but it's just very interesting time in the world to think in a period of rising anti-Semitism, here we have these extremely prominent politicians who are Jewish in areas that you never would have expected. So,
right.
Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Two old Jewish friends, Sam and Bernie, are baseball fans their whole lives. They played together in their youth, went to countless games together. When they got older, they never missed watching their favorite team on TV. One day, as they sat on a park bench reminiscing, Sam said, "Bernie, we've been friends so long and shared this great love of baseball. Promise me something. If one of us dies before the other, you'll come back and tell me if there's baseball in heaven." Bernie nods solemnly. "You got it, Sam. It's a promise." Not long after, Bernie dies. A few nights later, Sam is asleep. Suddenly, he hears Bernie's voice calling his name. Startled, Sam sits up. "Bernie, is that really you?" "It's me, Sam," Bernie says. "I've got good news and bad news." "What's the good news?" asks Sam excitedly. "There's baseball in heaven. The fields are perfect. The games never are rained out. We get to play with all the legends of the game." "Oh, that's wonderful," says Sam. "What's the bad news?" And Bernie answers, "You're pitching tomorrow." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Journeys are centrally important in Judaism. The act of leaving and heading out into the great unknown is crucial for us. At some level, the proper theme song for Jews might be "On the Road Again." Repeatedly, great Jewish leaders, even the whole of our people, head out into the wilderness to seek God, to make a new life somewhere else. It first happens with Abraham in the Torah portion of Lech Lecha. 2 generations, it happens again with Jacob, whose name is changed to Israel as he becomes the founder of our people. And it happens again with Moses, fleeing his country of birth in Egypt to find God in the Sinai Desert. He then leaves there to go back to Egypt and finally takes the whole people of Israel out of slavery in this week's portion of Beshalach, putting them on the path towards redemption and freedom. It keeps happening throughout Jewish history. The idea of the wandering Jew has ideological relevance as well as pathos. Wandering seems to be something we have to do, not just something we're forced to do. In particular, Jewish religious tradition has a peculiar perspective on the events of the Exodus, which reach a climax in this week's portion of Beshalach. The great drama of Jewish history really begins with this Exodus from Egypt, the escape from Pharaoh on the shores of the Sea of Reeds. It's logical we would focus on that, but in our prayers, practices, and traditions, we raise up this liberation from slavery and journeying out into the Sinai wilderness to the highest conceivable historical status, beyond even what seems appropriate. It's not just that we make Passover such a central holiday. The preeminent festival of freedom should be focally important, but we remind ourselves of the Exodus far more often than once a year. Every Friday night, we say Kiddush, we declare, we observe the Sabbath, Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, in remembrance of the Exodus from Egypt, which isn't even true, since according to our own Torah, the Shabbat goes back to God's creation of the world, long before the Exodus. In every evening and morning service, we sing Micha Mocha, a direct quotation from this week's Song of Moses in Beshalach, reminding ourselves yet again, 3 times daily, that we were slaves and were freed to head out into the wilderness. We focus on this great narrative and its denouement in nearly obsessive ways. Why? Perhaps it's because our central Jewish story is about transition, travel, hitting the road. It is the core narrative of Judaism. To paraphrase Descartes, we left, therefore we are. Our essential nature as a people was formed by this exodus. When we find ourselves in slavery, either physical, psychological, or moral, we must, as Jews, choose to leave. And seeing the way our ancestors did it, against all odds, in order to ultimately find a new life of ethical freedom and covenant with God, well, that can inspire us today, still. When we come back in a moment, our guest, Sally Poulad, explains how Leket Israel has become the country's food bank. She explores the important additional responsibilities Leket has taken on during the Gaza and Lebanon wars over the past year. Hear from the winner of our 2024 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for Service to the Whole Jewish People, Klal Yisrael, when we return in a moment, right here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish updates on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
Four Israeli female hostages were released by the Palestinian terrorists of Hamas last weekend. Karina Aryev, Daniela Gilboa, and Nama Levy, all aged 20, and Liri Alba, who was 19 years old. All were held in brutal captivity for over 15 months in Gaza by Palestinian terrorists. Israel released 2,000 Palestinian terrorists in exchange, 124 of whom were held by Israel on charges of attempted murder or committing murder. In the third stage of the ceasefire agreement, Hamas later in the week freed an additional 8 hostages, including 2 Israeli women and an elderly Israeli man. Israeli hostages released were civilians Arbel Yehud, 29 years old, and Gadi Moses, 80 years old, as well as soldier Agam Berger, 20 years old. In addition, Hamas freed 5 Thai citizens taken captive during the October 7, 2023 Palestinian terrorist atrocities. Fena Pongsak, Sathian Suwanapam, Sruyuan Wachara, Ziathal Benawat, and Rumnau Sarasak. In exchange, Israel released a much larger number of Palestinian terrorists. Israel and Hamas agreed on this week's release, which was not initially required under the terms of the current ceasefire, in order to resolve a dispute over Arbel Yehud, who was held by the Palestinian terror group Islamic Jihad. Israel had expected her to be freed last Saturday. When she wasn't, the resulting disagreement threatened to derail the ceasefire. Moses will be the first man and oldest hostage released as part of the current ceasefire, which started January 19th and is slated to last at least 6 weeks. The grandfather of 12 was taken captive from his home on Kibbutz Neir Oz by Palestinian terrorists. His partner, Efrat Katz, was later murdered by Hamas Palestinian terrorists. Hamas is expected to release 3 more hostages this week. Among that number might be American hostage Keith Siegel, one of 3 American hostages thought still to be alive. I personally met with his brother when I was in Israel a year ago. The others being released are Segui Dekelchen and Eldad Alexander. Hamas is also holding the bodies of 4 other Americans, or so it says. Keith Siegel is an Israeli Ola, an immigrant to Israel, originally from North Carolina. He was abducted from Kibbutz Kfar Aza by Hamas Palestinian terrorists on October 7th. Emily Damari, another captive from Kfar Aza who was freed at the beginning of the truce, reportedly asked Hamas to release Siegel instead of her, but the terrorists rejected the request. After Yehud is released, the only civilian women and children still believed to be in captivity will be Shiri Bibas and her 2 young sons, Ariel and Kfir Bibas. Hamas said back in November of 2023 that the 3 had been killed. Israel has not confirmed that, but recently an Israeli military spokesman said there were grave concerns about their fate. In addition to the dozens of Israelis it is captive, Hamas continued to hold 3 more Thai citizens. The releases brought the total number of hostages still held in Gaza to 82. 18 more are expected to go free during the first phase of the hostage deal. Hamas told Israel 8 of those 18 are dead, although it has not identified which ones. In other Gaza news, in a gesture that cannot be understood to be anything but futile, President Donald Trump said he has asked Jordan to accept Palestinians from Gaza and plans to press Egypt to do the same. Trump said that he spoke to Jordan's King Abdul II last week, 5 days after being inaugurated for his second term, 6 days into the ceasefire. I said to him, I'd love you to take on more because I'm looking at the whole Gaza Strip right now and it's a mess, it's a real mess. I'd like him to take people, Trump told reporters aboard Air Force One following a rally in Las Vegas. Calling Gaza literally a demolition site right now, he added, I'd like Egypt to take people. While millions of Palestinian refugees have lived in Jordan since Israel's founding in 1948, Palestinians, in fact, represent 75% to 80% of the population of Jordan. Arab states have fiercely resisted accepting any Palestinian refugees. They are concerned that allowing in Palestinian terrorists will undermine their regimes and eventually destroy their nations. Palestinian terrorists, after all, destroyed Lebanon, once a beautiful and successful country, now a basket case. Taking Palestinian terrorists into Jordan is what led to Black September, when the Jordanian regime fought a civil war against the Palestinian terrorists and eventually expelled them from their nation. There is not a single Arab regime that wants any more Palestinians in their country than they already have, and most don't want those. They'd prefer the Palestinians rot in refugee camps that have existed for more than half a century and be used as targeting elements against Israel, that is, terrorists, instead of undermining their own dictatorial Arab regimes. Some on Israel's far right would like to see Jewish resettlement of Gaza after the war. They've called on Israel to encourage Palestinians to leave the enclave. Frankly, that's insane. Well, the idea of resettling Gaza after 20 years. David Friedman, Trump's ambassador to Israel during the first term, said that Trump could support encouraging Palestinian emigration. Asked whether he envisioned such a move as temporary, Trump said it could be temporary, it could be permanent. Trump did not say how King Abdullah responded, but just days after October 7, 2023, and its atrocities, he said, no refugees in Jordan, no refugees in Egypt. Egypt's president, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, said the same thing at the time. Trump plans to speak to Sisi today. Egypt and Jordan both have peace agreements with Israel. During his first term, Trump brokered normalization agreements between Israel and several Arab nations. He's eager to strike a deal between Israel and Saudi Arabia now. People are dying there, Trump said about Gaza. I'd rather get involved with some of the Arab nations and build housing in a different location where they can maybe live in peace for a change. Perhaps Trump can charge them rent. Reconstruction of Gaza will begin under the third and final phase of the current ceasefire. We're less than a week into the six-week first phase. Frankly, encouraging a rebuilding of the Israeli kibbutzim in Gaza that were dismantled when Israel pulled out was just counterproductive pipe dream. And finally, amid the chaos of the sea of executive orders issued at the beginning of Trump's new presidency, the Pentagon's intelligence agency paused special events programming and related events associated with diversity, equity, and inclusion, including those designated for Juneteenth, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Black History Month, Pride Month, and Holocaust Days of Remembrance. Lest we Jews think that attacks on minorities will somehow omit us, we should now be disabused of that notion. And that's the news of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Sally Poulat from Leket Israel, which is the recipient of the 2024 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award on behalf of Klal Yisrael, the peoplehood of Israel, in the area, I guess technically in the area of rescue and service, because what they have done in providing food and food security to people all over Israel of every ethnicity is incredibly important. We talked a little bit about how it began in the back of a van with leftover food. Leket was supplied with a lot of leftover army food for a long time, right? Can you tell us about that and the transition that's taken place recently?
So there were three major sources that we were rescuing food from. The first is the IDF. They're required to have a meal for every soldier on base, even if the soldier is not on base that night. They have to have the meal. And then you know a Jewish mother was involved because they added 10% more.
Right.
Nobody should go hungry.
So Jewish.
So Jewish, right? It's incredible. So we actually go to the IDF, army bases across Israel, and we pick up and rescue the leftover food that wasn't served. And I'd like to point out, we don't pick up French fries. We pick up nutritious meals because the people that are receiving them typically cannot afford to buy nutritious meals, and they buy things that are less expensive. The second place that we go to is corporate cafeterias. The Intels and Microsofts of the world have unbelievable high-quality meals left over. And the third is hotels. Everybody's been to an Israeli breakfast or lunch. So obviously that all changed October 7th. The IDF was a little busy getting about 300,000 reservists into those bases.
Of course.
And getting them mobilized. I think the last thing they wanted to see was a Leket truck being pulled up. So for the first time in Leket's history, we actually, with the funds that we received and the generosity of people from around the world and America, very much so, we were able to buy prepared meals because we could not get rescued meals from the IDF, from corporate cafeterias. I mean, companies closed down for the first few weeks. We didn't know how bad things were.
How could they be providing meals if they weren't open? If, you know, they didn't want to be a target.
Hotels, everybody went home, you know, until the evacuees came in and all of that. So we bought prepared meals, and last year we ended up purchasing about 2 million prepared meals. We were serving about 330,000 people a week prior to October 7th, and now that number is up to 415,000 Israelis a week.
So that includes a fair number of people who were forced out of their homes by the war, whether in the south or in the north with Hezbollah shooting rockets. Does Leket discriminate in terms of who it serves food to?
No, we are not a political organization. We serve to any Israeli citizen. And that includes, obviously, the Jewish people, the Christian people, the Druze, and the Arab Israelis.
In providing these meals, how do you arrange the delivery system, for example? How do the people get the food?
We work with about 300 nonprofit little organizations scattered throughout Israel. And I want to say, before Joseph got involved with this 22 years ago, it was completely decentralized. Everybody kind of did their own thing. And he was able to kind of coordinate, helped coordinate all these different nonprofits. So the beneficiaries of our meals and our produce, we work with the nonprofits directly. We're talking about soup kitchens. We're talking about schools with underprivileged youth and youth at risk. We work with Holocaust survivors and the elderly. We're actually delivering meals up to the north, like in Kiryat Shmona, where elderly folks are unable to evacuate and leave their homes. So through these organizations and soup kitchens, battered women shelters, we get it to these locations, and they help us provide to the people most in need in that community.
I remember stories about people in Kiryat Shmona who just didn't want to leave, or they were down even near Gaza where they were too infirm to leave. Their home was adapted to them, and they had no means of getting food. Was Leket delivering it, or was it local charities that were doing it?
It was a combination. So we had people from Leket actually deliver, and shortly after the war, we did something where we actually did dry good purchases in boxes. We did dry good deliveries to people just to get them some nutrition, some food, as either they stayed in their locations or left for hotels and Airbnbs and what have you. That was a limited quantity because, again, our focus is to provide healthy food, vegetables, and fruit.
The farmers that you cooperate with, how did that evolve? How did that, because it started obviously with prepared foods from all of the different sources you said, hotels, banquets, so on, the IDF. And where is it now?
So Joseph told me the story personally, which I'm grateful for because it's a great story. A farmer had heard that Joseph was rescuing meals, as we talked about, and he called him up. He got his number, called him up and said, hey, we had a hailstorm last night. And in Israel, you get biblical hail.
Yeah.
So I have a crate of persimmons.
Barad.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Right? I have a crate of persimmons, and they're not high market quality level, but they're perfectly edible.
Right.
Come get them. So he's like, okay. So it started off with the persimmons, where farmers leave edges of the field.
Right.
For Leket, we have day laborers that go in and we pick the fruits or vegetables.
So it's kind of the peah and the Leket. It's both following
it's
the Talmudic
unbelievable, right?
and biblical
it's
ideas.
Mamash out of the Torah. Right?
Really out of the Torah. That's right.
And this was all made possible because of Joseph, quite frankly. So he started working with the farmers. As I mentioned, we're up to 800. A lot of the farmers in the Gaza envelope obviously were affected by the war. In addition to helping them with the labor, because of all the labor that was lost, and providing the buses. We also put a tour guide, by the way, in those buses to give them parnassa.
Because tour guides had no work.
100%. Okay. It was really pretty bad situation, and still is. We still are in the process of the war. People, you know, it's a...
Yeah, look, El Al is the only airline you can be guaranteed will actually land in Israel if you take it. That's right.
That's correct. So in addition to that, we also provided farmers with about $17 million in grants, because when the terrorists came in, not only were they intent on killing, murdering, raping, etc., they were intent on destroying our land. And they set fire to fields, they burnt down farms, they killed livestock, they burnt machinery. So these farmers went back to, in a harvest season and a planting season all in one, went back to their farms and had nothing. They had to start over again. So by providing them grants, they were able to go out and buy seed and equipment and get going again. We also partnered with Strauss, the chocolate maker in Israel.
Yeah.
And we provided upwards of about $4 or $5 million in loans. Very, very low interest loans to farmers, because we just didn't have enough.
They didn't have the capital to restart.
We didn't have the capital to help everybody.
Right.
But thanks to Leket's efforts, what I can say is about 70% of the farms in the Gaza envelope are still operating, and they're starting to get back on their feet.
And you referred to this earlier in the show. I don't think people realize. You know, we always think about the Galil, the Galilee, and the as the breadbasket of Israel. It's not true anymore. It's the South. 70-75% of the crops come from the South now.
But you also have the vineyards in the North, and you have the orchards, and
of course
now that's being affected. And as soon
in
as
the
we're
far
able,
north, right?
Yeah,
right.
As soon as we're able to get back in there, we're going to get back.
You know, when a rocket is, a missile or a rocket is shot off from Lebanon, and we say, well, it landed in an unoccupied area, that doesn't mean it isn't a vineyard or a farm and that there isn't tremendous destruction. I remember in an earlier Lebanon war, you know, driving through burned out forests all over the north of Israel. What's the distribution of the work that Leket is doing between the south and the north now? Do you know?
Well, a lot of the stuff we were able to do has been in the South, only because we've had access to it, thank God, since the troops were managing to get control back of the situation there, our IDF, our brave soldiers. In the North, from what we understand, Israel has really kind of, the IDF has taken over a great portion of the North, so you could only go so far.
Right.
It's a military zone. We've lost farmers. Missiles have actually dropped into fields and people have died. As soon as we can go further north, we absolutely will continue that effort.
When Leket made this shift, I'm still stunned by the whole busing random Israelis down to harvest. It feels very, I don't know, chalutz, very pioneering, right? Let's go harvest grapefruit today. Oh, tomorrow it's going to be barley.
Unbelievable.
How did that idea come about, and how did you publicize it?
So we have an incredible team back in Israel. We're a lean operation, but we connected with the farmers immediately, and we determined, you know, prioritized what their needs were. And as I mentioned earlier, the labor was a big issue. I will tell you that we had 95,000 volunteers last year alone. And we're talking about Israelis, we're talking about Americans and from the rest of the world. Despite El Al being the only game in town and landing in Israel, and an expensive situation, we got that help. And the year before, we were at about 80 to 85,000 volunteers. So can you imagine?
It increased in the midst of...
You would think the opposite.
Really a terrible war.
All these Israelis and all these volunteers came in. We advertised on WhatsApp. We put out communications to all our donors, letting them know that there's a new option to volunteer in addition to our field in Rishon and our distribution facility right outside of Renana. And people came. The bus would leave these major cities at a certain time, a certain place. We would WhatsApp the people that volunteered. They'd get on the bus and we'd bring them back to the spot at the end of the day. And amazingly, we saved so many different farms.
It's an incredible story. Sally, where can people go to find out more about Leket and Leket Israel and what and to help?
So thank you. We survive based on donations. It's super important. And at the beginning of the war, everybody was rah-rah. We still need that coming in. So we would be extremely grateful for those donations. And a big thank you to you and the dedication to your parents on this gift that you have bestowed upon Leket. Leket.org. There's an English landing page.
Leket.org.
Right. Thank you. And come volunteer also, you know, on that website.
An incredible way to connect to Israel,
come to Israel,
to the spirit
of
Israel.
You literally get your hands in the dirt.
Yeah.
You know, there's no other way to explain it, but your connection and you can't help but love being there, you know, and being part of that.
I want to thank Sally Poulette for a great visit here on behalf of Leket Israel, the winner of the 2024 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for service to Klal Yisrael, to the people of Israel. Keep feeding everybody.
Thank you, Rabbi.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Two Jewish. Our guest will be Rabbi Richard Agler, discussing the problems with Jewish prayer in this year, 2025. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. with all of our musicians. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning is a setting of the prayer for the State of Israel, Avinu Shebashamayim, composed by an old friend, Cantor Saul Zim, as sung here by Shmuel Barzilai, chief cantor of the synagogue in Vienna, Austria.
My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and of peace.
Avinu, Avinu, Sheba Shamayim, Tzur Yisrael v'Golo. Avinu, Avinu, Sheba Shamayim, Tzur Yisrael v'Golo.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.